All right, Alexandra, let's talk about the January 6th narrative. And in this video, we're going to cite much of the work from John Solomon from Just the News. Just real quick, John Solomon was one of the few reporters, the few journalists, real journalists, that got Russiagate and Ukrainegate 100% right. He's also been reporting a lot on Burisma as well, and he got that one right as well. Anyway, he's been digging around DC, and he actually comes to the conclusion that much of the narrative that we've been fed with the loaded terms like insurrectionists and incitement may not hold true once a proper investigation is done. And I think that's the main point, is that the United States has rushed into an impeachment without a proper investigation. And Solomon points out at the beginning of an article that he's produced regarding some of the facts behind the January 6th event, that this is not uncommon in the history of the United States. And you could just point to incidences like Iraq WMDs, like Benghazi, like the Steele dossier. Many times the media rushes out to state certain things as what should be believed. But once an investigation is done, over time, the facts prove that it was nothing like what the media wanted the public to believe. Benghazi is a great example, or Iraq WMDs, where, you know, the U.S. rushed to war, but Iraq didn't have WMDs, even though they assured us that Iraq did have WMDs. Benghazi, they said it was a protest, and now we know it was a very well-planned attack. And of course, the Russia dossier, which everyone said, this thing is real, it's real, and it turned out to be a complete hoax fabricated by a girl living in Limassol, Cyprus. That's how much of a hoax it actually was. And John Solomon, I think, is making a great point in that we should all take a step back and not make any claims as to what happened on January 6th, claims that we know certain things happen, until an investigation is done. Because as we go into the video, I'm going to read you three questions and points that John Solomon makes as to why the narrative already is starting to crumble. So we all need to not buy into the mainstream media propaganda and just give it a little more time until we can get some more facts out, which I am confident, as is John Solomon, will have a much better understanding as to the real facts behind the events on January 6th.
I think this is entirely right. Now, can I just first of all talk about John Solomon very briefly, because I think it's important. I said it in a previous program, but I'm going to say it again. Firstly, he is an outstanding reporter. Secondly, when he was reporting all those things last year about the connections between Hunter Biden and Burisma, and all of this, by the way, in the context of an earlier attempt to impeach Donald Trump, he was ridiculed and abused by many sections of the media and by various people in public life. And he was basically forced to leave the Hill, where he had been publishing his material. He has been proved completely right. All the things he was saying about Hunter Biden and Burisma have turned out to be corroborated and almost certainly true. And it turns out that they were the subject at that time, when John Solomon was under abuse and criticism, of an investigation by the US authorities themselves, which shamefully they kept secret. Anyway, let's now turn to the events on the 6th of January and John Solomon's points about these. Now, can I first of all say that it is quite extraordinary that the House of Representatives, the Democrats in the House of Representatives, egged on by the media, including parts of the pro-Republican media, have been pushing forward with an impeachment, despite the fact that they have not undertaken any investigation whatsoever of what actually took place. I say that because, though I have never been an investigator myself, I have often been a person who has been involved in assessing the results of investigations. And I think I can say with absolute certainty that in no single case have the results of an investigation corresponded exactly with the initial reporting of an event or of an incident. Always, when you investigate something, you discover that the popular narrative, if you like, is wrong in fundamental ways. Now, on the 6th of January and the days after, as well as the great upset and shock that I felt, there was for me an absolutely obvious question. And that is that this rally that was going to be held in Washington, D.C., had been known about for at least a week, probably longer. And it seemed extraordinary to me that no real effort was made to secure the protection of critical buildings in Washington, D.C., first and foremost, the Capitol, which would be an obvious focus of this kind of rally or protest. And I was genuinely puzzled and perplexed as to why that was so. It also seemed to me that, firstly, the allegation of incitement that was being made against Donald Trump made no sense and did not correspond in any way with anything that he actually said in the speech he made at that rally, where he was very careful to tell his supporters to protest peacefully and patriotically. Those are the words there. You will find no word in that speech that encourages anyone to use violence, either directly or implicitly. So I have always felt that allegations, claims that that speech incited anyone to undertake unlawful conduct were impossible on the facts. And I have now read the consensus of legal opinion in the United States, which is that those comments are impossible to litigate as incitement anyway, as a matter of law, and that they are clearly protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution. Now, that was one thing. But the second point that struck me, and this struck me right from the start, is that how could Donald Trump conceivably have incited anybody to storm the Capitol when he could not have known and would not have known that the Capitol was not being properly protected and secured? Surely he would have expected that proper security measures would have been taken to secure the Capitol. So given that that is so, he cannot reasonably have anticipated that an event would take place like the one which took place on the 6th of January. And moreover, focusing so much on Donald Trump ignores the actions of other parties who were clearly far more responsible for what took place, those parties being the protesters who entered the Capitol themselves, but also, first and foremost, those persons who failed in their duty to secure the Capitol properly. Now, John Solomon's comments and questions and discussions bear directly on this issue, because what John Solomon says is that there was clear intelligence circulating within the police and national security bureaucracy, both the local police, the police in Washington, as I understand it, but also the officials who are tasked with securing the capital itself, and whose job it is, incidentally, to report to the Speaker of the House and the Senate Majority Leader, respectively, to Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell. These people were being fed intelligence that there was a plan on the part of some people who were intending to come to that rally to launch some kind of attack on the Capitol. If that is true, and I have no reason to doubt it, and I think it is highly likely and plausible on its face, and John Solomon, who, as I said, is a highly reliable journalist, says that this was so, then if this was planned in advance, it cannot have been connected to anything Donald Trump said at that rally, because clearly he couldn't have incited some people to do something that they were already intent on doing. And as a matter of fact, he didn't, as I said, incite anybody anyway. But secondly, it begs the question of why, when all the people who were responsible for securing the Capitol had that information that something of that nature was being prepared, they didn't take the necessary steps, which it would have been easy to do to protect it. So there are lots of questions which certainly should have been asked in any impeachment process, which have not been asked, and which mean that the impeachment is proceeding on the basis of evidence or of an official narrative or a popular narrative, if you prefer, which in its basic details is almost certainly wrong.
All right. So we already have video that's coming out, which shows that there are people who are planning something. I'm on Citizen Free Press, and it says, "What's the floor plan? New suspicious video emerges from the Capitol siege." And sure enough, this video, without a doubt, shows people trying to get into the Capitol and people inside a room in the Capitol, and they're talking about floor plans and they're coordinating efforts. I mean, this is without a doubt. I'll put a link to these videos down below so everyone can take a look. But they're making the rounds, and it's as clear as day that there is a group of people that are talking about how they are going to cause trouble inside the Capitol. Who these people are, I don't know, but we have their faces. We can see them in the video, so it shouldn't be very difficult for the authorities to track them down and see what's going on. The one woman that seems to be coordinating everything is a woman in a pink hat, and she's outside, and she's kind of directing people where to go and how to do things and what to look for. So that's the first thing. John Solomon's article is titled "Rush to Judgment: Three Crucial Questions Remain Unanswered About the Capitol Siege." What did Nancy Pelosi know? A prior plot or spontaneous riot? Were there inside facilitators? I will put a link for this article down below. The three questions that John Solomon asks are in order. How could Trump incite an attack that had already been pre-planned and was in motion before his speech ended? We know, as a matter of fact, that the FBI, the NYPD, the DC police, they all had credible intelligence that there was something was going to go down at least a week in advance. So how could Trump incite something that was not spontaneous and that the police already knew was, or at least had information of possibly occurring at the Capitol? The second question that John Solomon asks is, what did House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the other leaders in Congress know, and when did they know it, about the possibility for violence and the Pentagon's pre-attack offer to send National Guardsmen to reinforce the Capitol Police? There were offers to send National Guard in there. There were opportunities to lock down the Capitol better. They weren't taken. And as you said, Alexander, all the information, especially from the sergeant at arms and all the people that are responsible for securing the Capitol, they just didn't do their jobs. It seems they have, many people have resigned over this, I believe, including the sergeant of arms at the Capitol. And Solomon asked the questions, well, what did Pelosi, Schumer, Mitch McConnell know then? Because obviously the security of the Capitol were liaising with them and they must have told them about the offers for the National Guard of Protection. Obviously, those offers weren't taken, so we need to figure out why. And finally, the last question is, this is a troubling question, is were there facilitators inside the Capitol and outside it who instigated or enabled the attack to be carried out? John Solomon says that Representative James Clyburn, a Democrat, very anti-Trump, said one of the House's longest serving and most respected members first raised this question a few days ago. He aptly noted that protesters were able to locate and penetrate his unlisted, unmarked office within minutes, raising the possibility they had inside help. I just want to say very quickly two more points. The final point about inside information seems to corroborate with the video that's now out, where you have this woman in a pink hat kind of directing people and telling them where to go. How did she know all these things? It seems to be someone must have given her something. So I don't know. That has to be investigated. And John Solomon has asked for information from the DC police. He's made a Freedom of Information Act request. It has been denied. And it's been denied because the DC police, the Capitol Police Chief, said that it would be compromising the people's privacy. And John Solomon notes, and I quote, It is preposterous to claim that public officials like the Capitol Police Chief and the Sergeant at Arms are protected by privacy when the information they possess was collected while in the employ of the U.S. taxpayers and concerns events of a national tragedy that occurred on public property like we just experienced. They were government witnesses to an event of national import. Some have talked to the media, and their information should be given to the American people. So that's very curious that the Capitol Police will not release this information to John Solomon. So once again, we can get a clearer picture as to what happened on January 6th.
Absolutely. I mean, there's many unanswered questions, and John Solomon has asked many, many good and correct ones. I mean, first of all, just to come to one specific point, clearly, Donald Trump did not incite the storming of the Capitol, at least not in the speech that everybody is talking about. I've read the speech. I've read the speech carefully. It makes it perfectly clear that people should protest peacefully. It also says, by the way, a point which many people have overlooked, that certifying the results would be Congress's decision. So far from usurping Congress's power, he actually admits it. He admits Congress has the power to certify the election. So, you know, what he asks people to do is to go peacefully and patriotically to the Congress to support, to provide, you know, urge support of the representatives that, you know, he said were acting properly and maybe not be so supportive of those others who were not. That's all he says. There is nothing in this speech that in any conceivable shape or form incites anyone to do anything unlawful or illegal or violent in any way, and certainly not what took place at Capitol Hill on that day. And of course, if this was all pre-planned by someone else, then that speech could not have incited it, because the people who were carrying out those things were acting in accordance with a pre-prepared plan. And of course, if they were getting inside information, as John Solomon correctly says, this would have been a conspiracy. It would have been a conspiracy anyway if they'd pre-planned an attack of the nature that took place. But it would have been an even wider and more concerning conspiracy if they were getting inside information from people within the Capitol building who were able to identify to them where particular offices and rooms were and that sort of thing. So much to look at here, questions that are not being asked. But for me, an even more obvious point is the complete failure to secure the building at all. Given that Congress was meeting, given that there was a protest rally going on, it's basic law enforcement precaution to make sure that a building is properly secured. You should always do that. And if you're getting intelligence that there are people in, you know, that there are people who might be planning something of that nature. Intelligence that's been passed around by the FBI and, for all I know, others also. Then, of course, you should take the necessary precautions. And, of course, you should inform the leaders of Congress that this might be taking place. You should also, by the way, inform the president. I'm not sure whether any of that was done, and I'm not sure if it was done, what these important people did with that information. And can I just say also, the one thing I do know for a fact is that there were offers to provide National Guard protection to the Capitol and that they were refused. And that one person who took key decisions, repeatedly refusing offers of assistance to control the protest, was the mayor of Washington, the mayor of the District of Columbia, who is, of course, a political opponent of Donald Trump. I'm not saying anything more than that. I am just pointing out that at least one set of important decisions was made by someone who is known to have been not one of Donald Trump's supporters and friends, but one of his staunchest opponents and enemies. So all of this should be properly investigated and researched. And then, when that investigation is complete, then, but not before, you start taking legal action. Not by way of impeachment, because, of course, by then Donald Trump would be out of office anyway, but by using the very effective processes of the criminal law. I have said already that based on that speech Donald Trump gave, in my opinion, under the criminal law, he has no case to answer, but several other people perhaps do. Obviously, the organizers of this attack on the Capitol building, who may have engaged in a criminal conspiracy, possibly other protesters also who entered the building, who may have committed other criminal acts. And of course, those people who failed to act to protect the building itself, who may have been negligent, which is a civil law issue, but who might also, given the circumstances, have been criminally negligent as well. That's what you ought to be doing. That's what you ought to be looking into, not starting an impeachment, which is based on no evidence at all, just news reports. And in fact, some news reports, as I pointed out in a program I did for my own channel, which are anonymously sourced and which relate to events that took place after the Donald Trump gave his speech and after the incident had actually happened. So, you know, it's people are getting everything the wrong way round. They're putting, as I said, the cart before the horse. And I wonder whether part of the reason is that there isn't a rush to blame everything on Donald Trump. Because some people know that the blame is actually far more widely shared, and perhaps Donald Trump himself was not to blame in the way that they want us to think he was.
All right, and there's one more fact that I forgot to point out, and this one also kind of destroys the incitement narrative, and that is that the official timeline of events, and this is from John Solomon's article, by the way, the official timeline of events constructed by the New York Times through videos shows protesters began breaching the perimeter of the Capitol a full 20 minutes before Trump finished his speech. And of course, that raises the question, how could someone incite any type of violence when the violence actually happened 20 minutes before the speech even ended?
Well, of course, and the answer is, to answer to that obvious question, is obviously he can't have done. I mean, as I said, the speech itself does not constitute incitement. I mean, this isn't just my opinion. It is, as I said, the opinion of the legal community. I've been reading articles by Andrew McCarthy, who, by the way, supports impeachment. I'm not sure on what basis, by the way. I'm finding it increasingly difficult to understand his reasoning, but that's another matter. He's clearly said, and he was a former federal prosecutor, that a case of incitement cannot be brought here. And of course, Jonathan Turley, who we all know and speak much about and all greatly respect, he takes the same view. He clearly says that there is no incitement case here at all. And of course, if it was pre-planned, there couldn't have been incitement, even if Donald Trump had said other things than the things that he did. And if these events took place before he said anything, then of course there couldn't have been incitement either. I mean, the whole thing makes no sense. People have rushed into an impeachment process without checking the facts. And the facts are increasingly turning out against them. May I say again, this is absolutely typical. When I say that I've looked at investigations, I've also looked at investigations which ended in, which looked at miscarriages of justice, people actually being imprisoned for crimes they never committed. And in at least one case I know of, that happened because a prosecution was rushed and a jury was swayed by emotional reporting of an incident, which it turned out was fundamentally and in fact entirely wrong, and that the person in question was entirely innocent of the case which had been brought against him. The case in question, by the way, for people to know, was that of a murder in Britain of a BBC journalist called Jill Dander.
All right, we'll leave it there. Alexander McCurse, thank you very much. Guys, please follow us, subscribe to our channels on BitChute, Odyssey, and Rumble. You will find those links down below, and also PayPal, Patreon, Subscribestar, and BitChute. Please help this channel out by donating to this channel. We really appreciate all the donations. And of course, the merchandise is at the Durant Shop, the best merchandise in the world. Magic mugs and all kinds of shirts, long sleeve shirts, you name it, we've got it.
Long sleeve, short sleeve. We've also got amazing hats like this one, which you can see, both trucker's hats and baseball hats, hoodies and sweatshirts, amazing things. We get rapturous feedback from the people who buy it, and you buy them, and you get to support the Durand by buying them too. So you can support the Durand by buying from our shop, and you can support the Durand by supporting us in our other platforms and by supporting us through PayPal, Subscribestar, and Patreon. And please look up our other channels also, Alex's channel and mine. You'll find links under this video. And please also come to our next broadcast.
All right, Alexander McCurse, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.